Hey guys, welcome to the John Lovell Show. It's going to be a little bit of a different show today. I have a friend of mine, Travis Haley. Travis, a little over 20 years ago this week, he engaged in one of the most memorable battles. This was Blackwater stuff 20 years ago, the Battle of Najaf. If you don't know anything about it, you're in for a treat. We'll interview Travis today. After we interview him, we'll go into our normal Q&A ambush stuff, and we'll end with dad jokes because these are dark and desperate times, and a little bit of a boost wouldn't be such a bad thing. By the way, on the day we're recording this, this is Monday, we're facing a solar eclipse. So if the world ends today, you won't actually be able to see this on Wednesday. If you are viewing this on Wednesday, congratulations, we've made it. The conspiracy theorists were wrong about the world ending today, and so give yourselves a homeschool high five. You made it. You did not die. But you will, one day. It could be tomorrow or like 60 years from now in like hospice. And
John, you're doing
surrounded
so good.
By your grandkids.
You were doing so good.
There's like a 30-car pileup on the interstate, and you were smashed into being a much flatter version of yourself. You just don't know.
Just enjoy the show, John. Oh,
I'm just saying, you got to keep your head on a swivel. Graveyard humor will prepare you for this show today, guys. We are off to a weird start, but we're doing it. Here we go. Travis Haley, welcome, man.
Hey, brother. What's going on? Good to see you.
Not a lot. It's been a while. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Awesome. Well, hey, for those people that follow the channel that don't know you, I think a lot of folks already will, obviously. Let me give a quick introduction for you, and we'll jump in. We got some warm-up questions and then some good questions from past, from military, some current events, and Haley Strategic, all that jazz. Sound good?
Looking forward to it.
Travis Haley is a former Marine Corps guy, forced recon, so special operations community. Also did some contracting, particularly with Blackwater. We'll talk about that. Was around in the early days. Some folks have been around long enough to know Magpul Dynamics. And so Travis Haley, doing all kinds of online streaming content, became one of kind of the pioneers, the first gun guys on the internet. I'm like a second generation guy. So Haley and other guys really doing a lot to begin the gun industry online. Now has a company, Haley Strategic, multiple companies, but Haley Strategic specifically is the company that provides all kinds of in-person firearms training and provides all kinds of products. So Travis, did I miss anything big?
No, I think you got most of it. Yeah.
All right. Well, fantastic. You ready for some warm-up questions?
All right. I'll try.
All right. These are like rapid fire. So some of them you'll want to bite on, but we just got to kind of power through. Sound good?
All right. I've seen you do this before. My brain hurts just watching other people try to answer.
No, whatever. You're a smart dude. Don't play dumb with me. You were smart enough. You could have been an Army guy.
I could have. I almost. That's like everybody says. I almost joined the Army.
One got away from us. I'm so upset. All right. Man. A movie that you choose to watch if you had to watch it 50 times in a row. So you can pick your poison. What movie? Sounds miserable.
It's between Big Lebowski. I can't. Or Full Metal Jacket.
The Dude Abides. Have to survive a zombie apocalypse, and you can choose one person from the gun industry to go shoulder to shoulder with you against that. I don't count.
My queen. My wife.
Rip. Okay. All right.
I'm gonna need that support, man.
That sounds good.
I'd call you too. EDC. Don't worry. I'd call you too.
Sounds good. EDC pistol.
Glock 48.
All right. You could live in any time in history other than our current time.
Ooh. I think
that's culture too.
Man, that's a good one. I would have to say probably 1500s samurai.
Brutal. All right. You're going to be gifted either a tank of your choosing or a Blackhawk.
Oh, man, that's a hard one. I got to say Blackhawk.
I'd do it, too. I'd always regret it either way. But, yeah, you can eliminate one federal agency.
ATF.
ATF, good one. Cardio or weights?
Cardio.
Fireplace or wood-burning stove?
All my liberal friends are going to get mad, but wood-burning stove.
Sauna or cold plunge?
Both.
You said both?
Both.
You got to choose one, man. You got to choose one.
All right, cold plunge.
All right, jiu-jitsu or striking?
Jiu-jitsu.
Sounds good. That's it. That's the warm-up questions. You made it. You crushed it. I don't think there's a way to fail those.
What's my score?
4.
That's not bad out of 5.
Don't get excited. That's out of 200.
Oh, shit.
All right, cool, man. Well, let's have a conversation. You're coming up on a 20th anniversary for a major battle that went down when you were working for Blackwater. Can you tell us a little bit about that for those who aren't acquainted with the story?
Yeah, you know, it was so back in April 2004, I had left the Marine Corps just in January, and I was still active in the reserves at the time, and stayed in the reserves for about another 4.5-5 years, I think, if I remember the dates right. About 2009, I think, is when I left. And anyways, in 2004, there was a, you know, it's called the Benghazi of Iraq by a lot of guys that were there, because there's so many unknowns that we still don't know of what happened today. You know, there were some agencies involved in doing things, and from what we understand, it kind of pissed off Muqtadir al-Sadr. So if anybody follows the Iraq-Iran conflict and how Iran has kind of taken over in that world, Muqtadir is a Shia, so he was in charge of the Mahdi army at the time and lived out of the city of Najaf, the holiest city in Iraq. And so we had a long story short, a team was pinned down there. We don't know what was going on, but it was kind of turning into this siege and a lot of politics involved, a lot of screaming and yelling going back and forth between Ambassador Paul Bremer, who was a presidential envoy at the time in Iraq, who we were protecting on the Bremer detail for Blackwater. And all solid hitters. This is one of the first contracts. This is before all the crazy stuff went down in the Sears Square shootings, and where I think the contracting world kind of let its guard down a little bit to standards, in my personal opinion. And so most of the guys on the team were, you know, CAG dudes, DEV dudes, Rangers, Recondos, SF guys, you know, dudes with some pretty serious, you know, resumes, and guys that had been in from probably a minimum of 12 to 15 years, most of them retired guys that were some of the greatest guys I've ever worked with. And so as we were on the detail for Bremer in Baghdad, if you kind of think about how the presidential envoy works in a nutshell, so people that don't understand this can understand, we have to appoint this envoy, this president, so he can control and operate the country and try to rebuild the election process and work with the governing council and work with the Ministry of Oil and try to figure out what the hell's going on, get rid of all the laws and the law books from Saddam. Like, you know, if you don't kiss the ring of Saddam, then you must be put into a wood chipper. Like, so Bremer was like, yeah, let's get rid of the wood chipper law. That's horrible. Uday and Kuse's lion den was used for punishment. And so, like, that's what he's doing. Now, around the country, you have Mosul, you got Najaf, you know, Tikrit, you got all the cities, Ramadi. You have to have kind of a governor, if you will, in each one of those to be able to control communications back to the capital. And that's where you have, like, these ambassador types that work in those positions that report to Ambassador Paul Bremer. Well, anyways, one of those sites in Najaf was taken siege, and they tried to get everybody out. It was surrounded. But by the time communications got back and forth between Baghdad and Najaf, there was a lull. And so the surrounding had happened before anybody even knew about it. And then when we found out there was some weirdness going on, I happened to be on office watch at the time, in Paul Bremer's office, and when this report started coming in, hey, we're not going to make it through the night. Hey, this is really bad. Hey, there's hundreds of insurgents. We're getting IED'd. There's people dead in the streets, etc. But the U.S. military wasn't in a hurry to try to fix that problem, not so whatsoever. And so. And that's where the conspiracy started to come into play. And a lot of guys still to this day don't like talking about it. I talk about it because not because it was, oh, it was my biggest, like, I've been in a lot of gunfights, man. I've been in a lot of conflicts. I've got multiple tours. This was just another gunfight, but there's some weirdness behind it that still people don't know about. So, and I don't really care about the weirdness. What I care about is that people are honored that were incredible that day, or in those few days that led to the rescue of a lot of American civilians and military personnel that weren't getting the support that they needed from the U.S. government. All airstrikes were shut down. All medevacs were shut off. I've got a wounded Marine, Corporal Yanni Lung, right next to me with a sucking chest wound. We personally medevaced him out. Just me and my pilot flew all the way back to Baghdad, got him to the CAS, rearmed the helicopter all by herself, flew all the way back down into country, into Najaf. And, you know, that kid was going to die. And so we decided to medevac him ourselves because we needed food, we needed water, we needed supplies, and, well, mostly weapons and ammo. And so me and Steve flew straight back in by ourselves. And what I heard, Lonnie Young got the Silver Star for that day, for his actions as a Marine on the rooftop. And he was a messenger, like some defense systems messenger guy. And he was there checking the servers. And he found himself in the greatest gunfight of his life. And so a lot of those things are going on. So I like to talk about those guys, like the great stuff that happened, the bad stuff that happened that are always great lessons learned. You know, it's what do we do in every class? We say, hey, what are you sustaining and terminally taking away from this lesson? And what do we want to get better at? You know, that's what I consistently try to do with stories like this, and not just this one, just because I was involved in it, but any great story that I think is been ingrained in history that people need to remember. That's why we're celebrating. It's the 20th anniversary this year, so we'll be doing a couple things for that, and talking a little bit more in depth about it, and you know, because it's history, man, and history's being deleted all over the country, as you know. Yeah. And I don't like that. So, and I think it goes back to a lot of guys will say, hey, you need to be a silent professional, shut your mouth. And I'm like, yeah, there's no such thing. No such thing as a silent professional, right? And I know in the soft community, we get kind of, you know, told that a lot, but I think we've missed that. We messed that up over time. And I think there's absolutely there's absolutely such thing as a quiet professional. But there's no such thing as a silent professional. If so, how are we supposed to continue to push history and educate people and learn from our lessons and our failures and the sacrifices of guys that died like that day? Yeah. So that's why I'm doing it.
I see. Yeah, I see the parallels behind Benghazi as well. It's just an absolute goat rope that, given sufficient support, it didn't have to be that bad, because your event, that wasn't just a gunfight, that was like a 2-day rip, right? I mean, that,
yeah,
preventable.
I shot 800 rounds or more of Mark 262 that day out of a sniper rifle in those 2 days. So it wasn't something that was like, oh, let's just go in and get out and we'll be done. You know, we went in to support and then realized we can't support unless we land. And if we land, we might be stuck here. And that's what happened until we snuck out and did a medevac. But agency did some operations, apparently, you know, allegedly the week before, that kind of pissed off Muqtadir al-Sadr. And he said, I want that CPA, take it now. So I actually ran into a pilot in Washington, D.C. He was outside smoking a cigar one night. I went out to make a phone call, and he said, hey, what do you do, man? And we just got talking, and I said, yeah, you know, I was a Marine and blah, blah, blah. And he said, I'm a Viper pilot. And I said, oh, yeah, I've, you know, relied on you guys to save our asses a couple times in combat. He's like, well, where you been? And we started talking, and I said, Najaf. And he said, wait, Najaf, like the Marine battle or the Blackwater battle? And I said, the Blackwater. And he said, oh, man, I was on that mission. And we hugged.
No
and,
kidding.
Yeah, it was cool. And he's the one who dropped the JDAM when the helicopters were coming in on final. And that JDAM impacted about 700 meters from us. I think it was a 2,000 pounder. And man, we thought we got shot out of the sky when that aircraft frame kind of shook and ripped apart. And I know Steve's going, what the hell? Look back, what's the rudder? You know, I'm like, hey, tail rotor's fine, man. Looks like we're good. I don't know what that is. And then I look out, I'm like, okay, that's destruction. This is mushroom cloud coming up. And we're like, okay, we got to land right now. And he said, he goes, Travis, we were estimated up to 1,000 insurgents moving on you guys at any given time.
Wow.
And we've heard numbers of up to 10,000 Mahdi army under Muqtadir al-Sadr was in the area willing to support. But we had about, you know, and that was the case. You could see groups of 50, 100 people running at you at any given time, shooting or not shooting. They would just be armed with flags and somebody next to them with a rifle and PKM and RPGs and mortars. And
wow. So, and you guys, I mean, y'all were a small force. Y'all were just a couple dozen, right? Or
yeah.
What did you guys have?
There was a team on the ground there, and that's the team that was trying to relay up to us and say, hey, we have a serious problem. And one of the team leaders down there, his call sign was White Boy. He, from the reports that I heard over the phone with Frank, who was the agent in charge of the Bremer detail, he's got a book out, and the agency apparently redacted a lot of stuff in his book because I helped him with all the photos of his book. Eric Prince's book was redacted by the agency for this type of stuff. I even watched Prince kind of redirect questioning with Sean Ryan the other day on it, and it's like, why? What the hell's going on here? You know, yeah. And it's like, you know what? I don't need to know the meat and potatoes of what it is, but I wouldn't just, you know, always remember those guys those 2 days. You know, just like all the other battles that I've been in, or like you've been in, or anybody else, we don't forget those things. But when somebody's purposely trying to delete history for some reason, yeah, I'm not okay with that.
I'm pretty tired of being bullied, or they weaponize your own compassion against you, and they try to frame it as if it's this virtuous thing to let them rewrite history or censor history. And if you have any type of recourse, anything to say about it, you know, you're cudgeled for it. And I'm like, no, history is actually really, really important. There's no identity in the present without a knowledge of history. And I mean, it's that whole Orwellian thing. He who controls the present controls the past. He who controls the past controls the future. I said that backwards, but it doesn't matter. The sentiment's absolutely true. So I'm all on board with, dude, if it's true, let's say it. Let's get it all out there. Because it is being deleted.
Yeah.
Your experiences on battlefield, you got out of contracting world, you're out of the military, and then you started doing a bunch of training. And now you have a training company. I do as well. I'm always, you know, we're trying to grow our training company and pinpointing instructors. Paul, our training director, he's like me. He's extremely picky. And so we just have a few lead instructors and a few assistant instructors. And so I'm always kind of making that study of how do you find, you know, the raw material, somebody who's a really great instructor, and then how do you grow them even more? What are criteria you look for in a great instructor? How does people watching, how do you know a great instructor versus just an instructor?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the biggest challenge we'll ever have is trying to find the right people. Now, we have a fairly large team. And when I say large team, I think some people are like, oh, you have 50 to 100 instructors. No, we there's no way you can scale that quality of right. of instruction, especially when with our kind of, I don't want to call it a genre, but like, you know, we really do dive into the sports performance and the body, specifically in our foundational classes. You know, our tactics classes are a little different. So, but when we're talking about basic kinesiology or physiology, or, you know, trying to make people understand how to be a little smarter, because that's the biggest problem we have is, you know, somebody's like, well, I don't know all these science words. I'm like, well, then don't carry a gun, because, well, why are you making it so complex? Well, because the last time I was in a gunfight, it was the most complex high performance situation of my entire life, and it will be yours as well. And so I think we shouldn't dumb things down. And, you know, if you look back again in history, what will you see? Extremely complex models that guys built and put together. You know, even World War II, you know, you look at Grandpa with the 1911, it's like, those guys could shoot, man. Those dudes could single-handedly run down trenches and zip targets at 50 meters. Yeah. My grandfather, who was in, you know, first wave invasion Normandy, got on me when I graduated boot camp and said, hey, you can't, what do you mean you guys stop shooting at 500 yards? And I know the Army doesn't understand what that even is, but it's like...
Shots fired.
Sorry, I had to do it. No, but like, seriously, I get home and he's like, What did you do after 500 yards? And I'm like, you guys didn't shoot the... And he's like, go get your dad's M1 Grand right now. And then he has me wind that elevation knob all the way up, and it goes to 1,200. And I'm like, what? He's like, grandson, we used to do, you know, 8-week shooting packages back in World War II with special units that would shoot out to 1,200 meters with iron sights. Like, what happened to the Marine Corps? And I was defeated. And I'm like, Okay, so I started thinking differently about standards, right? So when it comes back to that question of what do you look for in a person, it's not necessarily a tactical background. It's not necessarily you have to be in the military. You have to be in a law enforcement position. You had to have been in a gunfight. I don't think that's really necessary to be a foundational instructor. What I think the most important thing for me is I think it's the number one attribute to a warrior. And I've said this a lot, and you have to have this, and that's compassion. You know, the more you care about something, the harder you're going to fight for it. The second thing is vulnerability. You have to have the ability to be a better product today than you were yesterday. And then there's a process of how you do that. And so we look for guys that can get on that level. And see the forest is the third one for me. Those are my three little personal, I guess, rules to be excellent every day when I wake up. Is give a crap about something, you know, and mostly secondly, be myself, like care about myself, because if I'm not at my best, I can't help anybody. Yeah. You know, it's like I get injured or something, or right now I'm dealing with just elbow stuff. Like, it's fine. I just taught a class this weekend, but I don't like it. So I'm trying to always be better there. But I think interaction, public speaking is important. Of course, there's the program development and all that stuff that's absolutely necessary. But people that can just not speak in military terms, number one, because I think that's what a lot of guys get out. And I got buddies like say, hey, man, I just retired, dude. I'm a sergeant major and I want to work for you. I'm like, what do you want to do? Well, I don't care. I'll clean crappers if you need. And I'm like, I don't need you to clean my crappers. I need you to inspire, motivate, empower, and educate people. Yeah. So it starts with that intention first, I think is a really good word, is what is that instructor's intentions? And that is to help people. You know, even though we live in a world of products every day, I mean, look how we get consumed by, you know, the black rifle or equipment or, you know, techniques, tactics, and procedures. And it's like, yeah, we live in a world of products, but don't forget, it's actually a world of people. So it's the science mind. I try to get that, like Jared, my director of training, he's a freaking reproductive sports physiologist. He taught science for 10 years. He's a phenomenal shooter and teacher. He can really develop programs. We have a very interesting group of guys that can really think in different ways, you know, personal kind of personality identifiers. Like, so can you identify different personalities of people? And I'm not talking like cognitive personality traits, like a Myers-Briggs test or a 5-point or STAR or what's the other ones, like CVIs and other things like that. Those are some great tests. They're phenomenal, but they're cognitive based tests.
Right.
They're not instinctual based tests. So we psychologically evaluate everybody here in the office.
But I think so that you way we can, are a builder banker for your CVI.
Yeah, well, it's a builder banker, merchant, and
innovator.
Innovator. Okay, so you've done this.
Mm-hmm. All right. I've done all the different personality tests and looked at all the different metrics, but you mentioned CVI. Not a lot of people know that one, and I think it's my favorite out of all of them. It depends on what you're using it for, but organizationally, I think CVI is probably my favorite for usages. But you brought it up, and I was curious what you were.
No, they're fantastic. I'll tell you what I found, John. I've been working with the Kolbe Foundation or Institute for about 15 years now. It's KOLBE for people that are interested. And if you take the alpha test that they have, it is a instinctual test. So conation is an instinct word, not cognition, right? So that's your resume of life. If I gave you a resume and say, hey, I want to go work for the Warrior Poet Society, what you put down on that resume is everything you've learned, you're currently learning, you know, your schools and stuff. That comes from your cognition. But conation is your instinct, your innate drive and force and talents that you might have. It could be ancestral genetics also built into that as well. And it breaks down kind of like CVI does into four categories. So like compare CVI real quick. And this is a big one, right? So you go back to the question, like what do you look for in an instructor? You have to know this.
Yeah.
It's how we fact find is the first action mode, we call it.
Interesting.
So how you gather or share information. So now compare these to the banker, the merchant, and the innovator and all stuff. And then the next one is follow through, how you arrange, organize, or systemize. Okay. And then the third one is quick starting, how you deal with risk or uncertainty. And it doesn't mean you're not going to take risk. It means that because of one of the other action modes, you might take risk a little bit differently than maybe I do. And then there's implementer is the last one, how you handle spaces and tangibles. So that's going to be your musicians, your entrepreneurs. You're definitely an implementer. You know how to build things. You can see the forest. You can, you know, so now compare that to the innovator. And it's like, yeah, but you also take risks as well. You take a lot of risks as a business owner, as an instructor, as a media guy. You're always out there doing something, and you got to keep moving fast. You know, that's our quick starter nature. Right. Now, with that, you could the cool thing about it, and the thing that people hate, is that you can only score high in two categories.
Right.
So that means for me, I'm about a 4 in fact finding. But a lot of people will say, "Well, Travis, you're a great researcher," and I'm like, yeah, but it's not the first thing I do. And I'll ask you a question here in a second to kind of to see what your brain does. And then the second one is follow through. Okay, well, I'm a 2. So if you're like, hey, Trav, let's do a podcast tomorrow at 3 o'clock, like we're doing, I go, okay, wait. Hey Siri, make sure I got, you know, and I tell her
Wait, bro, know, are you plugged in the Matrix? You doing the Siri stuff?
To who?
No.
Sometimes. Turn that spyware off. I know everything's tapped already, but
in your contacts.
Shut up, Siri. She's over on my
Siri. Turn like yourself off forever. Go yeah. Pound sand.
And I get it, man. There's so many things that we're compromised on, and that's one of them. Just like everything else we use is compromised. And it's like, God, where do we go? You know. But that's where, you know, I have to make sure I wrote a note down, put it in a schedule, right. Not because I'm going to procrastinate, but I might seize the moment elsewhere. So I got to be careful with that, because I can be doing so many things at one time, which I'm good at, which a lot of people say you can't multitask. But I'm like, well, you can consciously task on one thing, but you can multitask on over 1,000 subconscious things if you want to at any given time. So my quick starter is a 7, 8, right? So I'm pretty high. I'm the guy that's going to like walk up to the cliff and say, hey, John, let's jump. And you're like, maybe we should get a little more information about the winds or something. Like, yeah, dude, I do this all the time. Let's go. And 60% of the time it works out every time, right? And we know those people in our lives. And then there's the implementer, the last guy. I'm a 7 in that too. I love to build things, and it doesn't mean like necessarily with my hands, even though I'm extremely mechanically inclined. You know, I'm still sewing, I'm still designing, I'm still drawing every concept and product that comes out with the design teams here. I'm constantly looking at shelving and racks in the warehouses and going, yeah, we need to do something different. I just got a gut feeling that this could be better. Musicians, artists, so like, you know, the entrepreneur guy that's building multiple things and being told to slow down, that's your classic quick starter implementer. So what do I need to do? I got to figure out how to fill those other spaces in my life with maybe a team of people. So now you add another person into that. Now we kind of going back to like some of these other personality tests, you know, like you probably, you know, if you've done like the, I think it's 5 points or something where you do the introversion and extroversion, I think it's Myers-Briggs, and you know, you can understand, well, I'm an introvert, so I must not want to talk to people. No. Tony Robbins is an introvert. He'll tell you that. When he gets off stage, though, get away from me. I got to off gas. I need to be by myself. I think you might be the same way, where I can get off a range. So you'd rather go home and kind of chill and quiet and just be away from
I love people, but I'm deeply introverted. I recharge alone. I like to be alone with my thoughts. And man, like it would be a fantasy of mine to go eat dinner alone and go to a movie alone. Just sort of like, I'm never really alone. Now I love That's my awesome. Family and I want to be with it, but all the time. And well, I do need recharge time where I'm just alone. Yeah. And my wife is built a lot like me, so we can actually recharge together once we've kind of downloaded and stuff. And so that's a good thing. But yeah, people don't understand that just because you like people and you're good at talking with people, that doesn't have any say on whether you're introverted or extroverted. It's where you get your energy. And that's a misnomer, I guess.
Yeah, and that's, I think, a good point for people to understand about themselves is like, because it's hard sometimes to find that time to recharge, where mine, I might get off the range or get out of a big event or something like SHOT Show, and it's like, or, you know, just as an example of a constant grind for 5, 6 days and go, 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 go. at the end of that, I would come up to you and be like, John, oh, wow. Hey, you want to go do something? To off gas, you know, so it's sometimes finding the right people in your lives that can help you with that.
Sure.
But also, you know, making sure that you take that time for yourself. And that's where I think the conation thing comes out, and why I love that test over a lot of the other ones is because you can't lie on it. It's the only instinctual based test where Myers-Briggs, CVI, narcissism, neuroticism, all those different tests out there that I mentioned earlier, they're cognitive based tests. So you can kind of answer them any way you want, and it won't catch you in what they call transition. Where this one that Kathy Colby developed, you know, many years ago, and she built a system to where if you do answer it unauthentically, it will put you in transition and say, hey, nope, you're right here. You're getting mixed up between your quick starter and follow through. So to give people an example, because this is how I implement it into the business and in specifically training and make sure my instructors know this. Because it maximizes our efficiency and how we can create a faster learning curve for people. We could get their brain into an active status much quicker. And that is that if you were to be a part of a project that helped mankind, would you be A, the person that researches it, like really dives into the details? Would you be the person that B, designs it, like really comes up with the systems and the processes and maintains those systems and processes over time from the get-go? And would you sell it? Now, sell it doesn't mean like used car salesman, hey, there's a great product. It means like, no, if somebody walked in right now and said, hey, what are you and John doing? Which one of us would be the first to probably communicate that? I think both of us, knowing each other, would probably, oh yeah, this is what's got going on. Here's the project. Okay, we got Teddy over here doing this. John's doing that. You know, I'm going to be doing this. Larry's doing this. And that person would communicate it or potentially build a marketing campaign or something on it and really sell it from the heart authentically. And then the last person would build it, the implementer. So out of those four, would you research it, design it, sell it or build it? Which one would you do first? Like you would insist on doing that most of the time in your life, and which one would you kind of resist a little bit?
Typically, I don't want to lead, but when I see something broken or not working and I can't get anyone else to fix it, I will step into that, even if it's not really my strength. And so my big thing is like, well, which one of those four things is the big gap? Let me fill that. But if I have my druthers, it's probably more to lean into my natural giftedness, and that's teaching and communication for life change, which would land us on option C. Let me speak and lead people to this. Let me help convince you why this is a good thing. Let's get some movement behind this. But it's I can only lean into that knowing that the other areas are well covered of like, I mean, the research is actually true and valid. The systems are efficient and not faulty. The building of it is done with good teams. And so anyway, but I think I'd be the third option. What about you?
I would agree with that. Yeah. And that's definitely my strength as well, the quick starter. And typically the quick starter can also be what they, you know, in law enforcement, they call them the shit magnet. Where they're first on the door, first on the fast rope, first on the ramp, they're first to be involved in a project, they're first to come up with something. But like you said, it doesn't mean they're going to be doing all the specific tasks. Like, I want to start a company. I'm going to run that charge. Now, does it mean I know how to set up an accounting and finance department? No, I'm going to go find somebody to help me that's smarter. But that's what the quick starter and the implementer kind of does there.
Right.
Why I love this so much is because when I'm teaching a person or sharing information with a person, we use the word teach very carefully. It's nice to know their cognitive strength right out of the gate. So we do an interview process in every class. We sit down with the whole student population and they tell where they're from, what they do for a living, why they're really there, not just, oh, I want to be a better shooter. Like, no. I can teach anybody to shoot a gun, but why are you choosing to carry a gun in our society? And hopefully the answer is so you can uphold a higher standard of care for that society and exercise our God-given rights. And that's what we're going to do. And that's what we want. The morals and principles and ethics, right? That's what I'm asking right. in that situation. And then I'll ask them, what are you good at? You know, and then we'll go through a little exercise. And sometimes the best way to do it is say, okay, you go to Home Depot, you buy a desk or something that needs to be put together, right? You got the little instructions, A, B, 1, 2, 3, whatever. What's the first thing you would do when you open that box? Some people are going to say, well, I'm going to read the instructions and make sure everything's there. And I'll itemize everything and make sure it's, because if I don't want to start building something and I'm missing a screw or a part, okay, you're a high follow through, high systemizer, and potentially fact finding there a little bit. The person that quick starts, like me, I will typically dump all the parts out and organize them into piles and go, okay, there's the A's over there, there's the B's. Yeah, it looks like everything's here. It's a desk. What's the big deal, right? I'm not building a weapon. I'm not building a product that I need 15 other people involved in on and designers and engineers. It's just me building the desk right now. So what do I insist on doing? I'll build it up by looking at the picture. I'll turn the box and I'm like, okay, and I'll use the instructions as necessary. And then I'll build it out and feel proud of it because of that implementer inside of me. And then all of a sudden I've got a couple parts left over. What do I do? Well, if the follow-through guy did that, he'd probably take the whole thing apart and get back to that step and re-fix it. And it would be a project that would not stop until he was done. I would typically take that screw and put it in a Ziploc bag, tape it underneath the top desk. And when the wife comes around 6 months later and says, hey, the desk is leaning a little bit. I go, oh, that's where that was. And I fixed it and I'm the hero, right? As a basic funny example. So we see that in classes. So here's an example I think you'll appreciate, and you've seen this over and over and over. You have somebody go, hey, can you show me that again? And you go up to them and you kind of know they're an implementer. They're good with the spaces and tangibles. They can see, they're a visual learner. I just show them and I'll say, hey, watch this. And maybe I'll feel like, hey, see this bone right here? Okay, that's your trapezium bone. Make sure you trap it into the other hand on the support hand. And I'll give them like basic visuals. They look great. The person right to the left of them says, hey, I'm not tracking on this. I'm trying to understand what's going on here. Can you explain that again? So even in the questioning, you'll hear it. But even if they say, show me again, I'll be like, holster your gun. Okay, what's the three big processes that we talked about that are going to help you achieve your goal here? That's what I'm forgetting, man. Can you help me out with that? Sure. And I work through those three processes until they're like, oh, that was it. And I'm like, okay, just try that. And they'll look just as good as the implementer, but the instruction is a completely different way right. because I'm working off of their conation, not their cognition.
Right.
And we have seen an amazing amount of efficiency with that program. And everybody here, I've got over 100 employees, and all of them are psychologically, cognitively assessed. So if I go into my engineering team and I'm like, Kevin, never mind. Hey, Amy, I need you to come with me, because he's going to be like, I'm in the middle of a project. Don't mess me up. I'm trying to follow through. Where the quick starter could be like, yeah, sure, I can pause this real quick and come with you, and I can go right back to it. Like that's my mentality. So, no, anyways, in a long-winded way of saying that, I use all of those tests out there, but that's the one we always have kept coming back to. And most professional sports organizations and Fortune 1 and 500 companies will use that method, because it will help show you now who's your merchant as well, right? Because then yeah. you got who's your introvert. Well, I can't get introversion or the merchant concepts out of conation, but I can find a foundation that we all will identify. Dang, that's why I think that way. Okay, that makes total sense. That's why, Travis, you were told you're never going to amount to anything, Travis, in high school. If you don't stick with the program, if you don't follow the instructions, Travis, why can't you just get along? Why can't you just do what you're told? I'm like, I have a problem with this. Can you explain it a little bit more from a common sense standpoint? Because that's missing in the world. Sure. It's the same in firearms in the military. You saw it with probably ranger instructors and shooting instructors. And you're like, hey, Gunny, I got a question. So I just got done doing a competition course this weekend with a bunch of grandmasters, and they do this, and they're the highest performer shooters in the world. But you're teaching us to do this by the numbers and do something that doesn't really make performance sense. Can you evaluate and justify that a little bit more? And, you know, next thing you know, I'm getting thrashed behind the Connex box for asking what I thought was a pretty good question.
Right.
Or as a senior guy saying, hey, that's just what the program is and that's what we're going to do. Sorry.
Right.
And I'm like, well, that doesn't satisfy me.
Yeah, that sucks. That's super sucks. If, like, I think it is absolutely our place as instructors, trainers, teachers, whatever your favorite go-to word is, but to be able to really be as efficient on the line as possible. You don't have amazing amount of time. You got a bunch of shooters on the line, and I want my instructors and I want myself to be able to diagnose in a moment what's actually the problem here. Where's the disruption in cognition? Why is this falling off? And whether it's something that is cognitively assessed or it's something some folks are just be able to intuit. And that's really rare, but it's fantastic when somebody knows naturally of like, here, no. You hold it. You tactilely exercise this and let me adjust you so that you can feel this, or hey, let me show you this, or let me explain what's happening, to be able to do that in a moment of like,
yeah, it's hard.
It may take a new assistant instructor and he's on this line talking to this guy for 3 minutes and he still doesn't get it. And then I can walk up and in 10 seconds unlock what is difficult for them so that they can immediately say, ah, that makes perfect sense. And I'm not trying to be like, oh, I'm flexing. I'm saying, no. It's a science of how do we get everyone as good as possible, as fast as possible. What's the magical script or demonstration that it's going to take to unlock understanding for this shooter, which is different from this one on the line? And I think some instructors, whether it's in our field or other fields, people haven't even taken the time to recognize that, no, people are built differently. And not only in their understanding, but in their motivation. And so that's an entirely different subject of how do you motivate folks? And so people aren't all built the same. And if you can intuit or analyze so that you can understand in a moment who you're dealing with and how you fix that, that's where we make money on the line. That's where we're worth our salt as instructors. And so though I would use somewhat different terminology, I think we're arriving at the exact same crux is we're trying to lean in to be the absolute greatest instructors on the planet. And if there's any place I can gain any more performance, I want to press into that. And you've clearly done your homework. I wanted to ask you about influential books. Did you have anything to kind of cap all that off of, or can I fire away my next question?
No, just to cap on that, I think it's important to find somebody that has the ability to understand people and has good people skills, right? It can communicate and storytell. I think that's important,
that's
right?
Good.
John, you're a phenomenal storyteller, man, and that's what makes me chime in and listen. I know I've been told that as well, because, and not to say like we're telling war stories and this and that. It's like, no, we're trying to just bring a purpose or an intention to TAC reloads, right? Like, so I try to go, well, hey, you have to understand the why of everything. That's our biggest deal here, is why are we doing this? And then what's the mental application of this? And then what's the physical application of this? So that's a quick 3-point model for just something like a speed reload or a TAC reload. Now, we have other models for other things, but can the instructor be a people person? Can they understand all about them physiologically, anatomy? We go into a lot of that. Brain, we do brain mapping and neurofeedback here. We have motion capture camera systems here for doing biomechanics research studies. We have ocular tracking. I have 3 ocular scientists on staff. So we constantly have the opportunity to dive into this knowledge and then go, well, how do we take that and turn it into a layman's term and storytell that back to where, so that's what I mean by the storytelling.
Yeah.
And then the diagnostics and of course the compassion and everything else that I mentioned earlier is really what I'm trying to find there. And that's the hardest part, man, is to find all of that and in a teammate that can serve the people that we care about. So, yeah.
That's good. So I'd love to know, what are some key books that have really helped shape you, stuff that really been impactful to you? And this doesn't have to be firearms, guns necessarily. This is just in the totality of you, your life. What's really impacted you?
Man, I quick start on book titles pretty bad. So I'll try to, I think it, because where my brain is right now thinking about instructing, if somebody's out there that really wants to share information a little bit more efficiently, maybe it's, public speaking is a big problem that I have with guys that come on, the new assistant instructor, and he's trying to find his voice, trying to find his truth. So we do like dig word reports, and we work with a lot of TED Talk coaches, and it helps us find our true message of what it is. One of them is Real Leaders Don't Do PowerPoint. It's a funny book title for especially guys that have been in the military. And it doesn't mean don't use PowerPoint or a keynote presentation, because we certainly do for certain courses. But it really tells you how to speak to people and what to say to people, and how to set up a room, because that's important. You know, how to set up a line. You know, the appearance itself, when you have 20 or plus students walk in, as just to throw out a number, they're never going to forget that. And so make that memorable for them. Make that experience important, because I'll tell you, our classes are, they're different. We also shoot guns. A lot of great conversations. You know, yeah, we'll still shoot 1,500 rounds in a course in 3 or 4 days, but the stories that come out of it, that we had a guy the other night that broke down and started, you know, getting emotional at the end in the after action, and that triggers a catalyst for everybody else. And he's like, yeah, I'm here, and I lied on day one about why I was here, and I'm really here because, you know, I was stabbed 12 times. I was attacked. And then all of a sudden you get this, and this guy's like a, you know, third degree black belt jiu-jitsu dude, and these guys came into his gym and attacked him and stabbed him. And he's like, I thought I was a badass. And so sometimes that hits you, you know, in the vulnerability spot, and you have to step up and go, I need to share this, because there's other people that are sitting here right now that also don't have the ability to speak, but I'm doing it. And guess what happened? 9 other people started, like, you know, coming out and saying, hey man, thanks for sharing that. I got something to share too. And that's what I think really makes the class, because shootings, as you know, from being in combat operations, John, the shooting's the easy part, man.
Yeah.
It's understanding why we're there, what we're doing. And then, you know, in the responsible armed citizen aspect, it's our job now to understand, like, if it ever happens to us, it's not going to be all rosy in the newspaper. You're going to look like a hero the next day.
Right.
Your life's going to be displaced. You're going to have problems. Your kids might be traumatized from seeing brain matter on the kitchen floor. And you don't think about those things until it's time. So those are the stories that really come out. And so that book, Real Leaders Don't Do PowerPoint, is kind of one that, you know, really hits home. One, as far as current events, I love. I read this a while back when it first came out. I know Jack Carr had him on the show, but the end of the world is just the beginning.
Yeah.
Have you read that
yet? Zihan, or what is the guy's name?
Yeah, I got it on my shelf over there, but Peter Zihan. Yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating book as well, because if I had not done any legwork in the area of geopolitics, I had no idea how important geography and population numbers and the lag effect of how that affects societies. It was brand new course of learning. Academia is so snobby and narrow in what government schools would teach us, and even private schools, because I went to all kinds of different stuff. But geopolitics, very, very little. And so with him, I got excited about your book. You're supposed to talk about this, but I'm saying, man, it was really a curveball. I didn't see that coming. I learned a lot.
Yeah, I love the concept that he talks about too, with and maybe helps ease, maybe not ease, people's dis-ease of the current state of the world. But if you think about the end of the world is just the beginning. Right. It's just starting to go over. So, like, you know, I know a lot of people think that, you know, if you look at the 90s, right, or look at even today, if you think about it, we have lived the greatest life a human being will probably live that we know of in modern times. So, like, if you look at, and that's, I think, people comparing, well, we had pop culture, and we can go to the movies, and we have sports, and NFL, and NASCAR, and we can make the American dream. We can get a job and work our butts off, and you know, and buy houses and have all that stuff. Like, you couldn't do that 100 years ago the way we do it today. It wasn't easy.
Yeah.
Life wasn't easy. The gap was this, right, between survival and war. That was the gap. Today, survival is over here. Like, you know, we're talking on a camera across the country. Like, you know what
right.
I mean? We couldn't do that 100 years ago. Matter of fact, 100 years ago, if I wanted to come travel to see it, you know, it may have taken me 10 years to get to you. And I'd be different, completely different people, and half my family would be dead by the time that journey was over.
Right.
And so today, I think in relation to that, in comparison to that, it's like, we have it so well that all of a sudden when something starts happening, I think he's saying that we're just down a tick right now. And that is horrible, right, in comparison to where we were going. And so that made me kind of think differently about how I think, you know. Wasn't as paranoid all of a sudden, you know, deep inside going, man, is this really going to be the end? No, it's just the first step, and we have to take precautions. We have to be self-reliant. We have to continue to do what, like, guys like you and I do to help the people that we care about. And that's not the politicians. That's not the people that are stuck into one party. That's because I'm an American, and I want the best for other Americans that want to be free and die for
right.
it, you know.
In his book, I mean, it is the end of the world for certain countries in certain difficult places. And he makes all kinds of predictions about what countries are literally going to be gone in the future, and a future of America, and, you know, what that may look like. But, you know, where he's just talking kind of academically about it, in the weeds, when you go through it, that's going to be massive amounts of actual death. That's awful carnage. The world is definitely going through some terrible birth pains and some, I mean, death and unrest, and things are coming apart. We're seeing America careen toward this Orwellian dystopia. And I think young men coming up have some reason for anxiety and pause, and they haven't accomplished what you have, and they don't have your skill set or background, but they're looking at grim storm clouds on the horizon. What is your advice for young men coming up? You're a dude's dude. You speak on subjects like masculinity. What would you say to young men watching this? What was some just general advice? I know that's broad, but have at it, bro.
Yeah, I'll try. It's such a complex, you know, and huge conversation to have. But in a nutshell, I would say, if you ask people what's wrong with the world, what's wrong with our country right now, and to give direction to specifically the youth that's growing up, like my son, he's on a recon contract in July, heading out. And I've got 7 kids, and he's the first one to head off in the military. And I've got the rest of them behind, kind of thinking about it. And I tried to get them to join the Army. I'm going to be honest. I did. Because typically Marines go there anyways.
That's funny. If my kid wants to join the Army, I'm going to try to convince him to join the Air Force.
Right. That's good. Probably a good choice.
The grass is always greener, right?
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing that, and I know you'll agree with this to a point, if somebody said, hey, what do you think is wrong with our nation right now? I'd say, well, we have so much information at our fingertips at any given time. We have so much information, yet we're not informed anymore as a nation. So the first thing I would say is educate yourself, right? Knowledge is, I think, one of the most important first steps in a belief system in yourself. What knowledge are you bringing to the table right now, right? That new instructor that comes to you, that new employee that comes to you, your child, when they're saying, hey, I'm about to go do this. Okay, well, what do you know about this right now? I think a lot of people have a lack of education. We don't need to dive deep into this, but look at wokeism for a second. Wokeism is extremely attractive to the uneducated, right? It's like, I don't know guys like me or you that have been through extreme trauma and chaos and life experiences, worldly traveled. We educate ourselves constantly. We read as much as we can. We go to as many seminars and conferences as we can. We try to interact with each other, like right now, as much as we can.
Right.
And we try to continue to learn. And I don't find a lot of people that are in that world that fall to that level of wokeness. And
I think, you know, School of Hard Knocks is certainly something that is a cure for some of the wokeness. You know, typically if you're an immigrant and you had a really tough past, and then you move to America as in your 20s and you've been through some tragedy, and you look around and you're like, wow, this is much better than where I came from. And you've fought it out and you've been forced to be practical. I don't see a lot of those thinkers going woke, but I am disturbed because I think there are some really smart people that have gone woke. They're very, very well schooled.
Yeah,
and so that's upsetting because it looks like a mind virus. But best I can tell, it's it's really like a malfunctioning kind of compassion, not the compassion that you're speaking of, which is love for the people that you're protecting and the value structure. It's an antithetical value system, because this is what I noticed about woke. Everything I call good, they call evil. Everything they call, you know, everything they call evil, I call good. And it's literally the war of right and wrong in values. And our intellects work to endorse and support whatever value system, but I see it more a value system, a moral battle playing out. What do you think to that? I know that's a little bit of a twist and wrinkle in what we were saying, but...
No, I agree 100% with that. Yes, the... And to go back to that point where you said about, like, yeah, there's extremely educated and intellectual people that have become woke, but you have to ask the second question. Have they actually been through the school of hard knocks? You know, just because you're a professor at Berkeley and you can speak to, you know, 1,000 different subjects and talk me under the table, doesn't mean you're going to be the person that I look up to when evil strikes, right? When it really truly strikes. It's the school of hard knocks guys that are going to come out and say, okay, we're here now. And that's because that's what typically happens, and you see it. These people will complain and say that, John, you're wrong about everything as it pertains to society or God or children, or, you know, what we should do with our children's sexual preferences and political. It's like, okay, you're not going to convince me of this ever, because we know something that's very, very true, and that's called history. And if you try to change that, you're going to be the one that comes running to us asking for help in the end.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, I try to teach, you know, go back to the uneducated aspect or a lack of knowledge. As you know, the old quote, what is it, you know, a lack of knowledge is what breeds the hatred. You know, look at, like, why do we still have race issues in this country? Like, seriously, if go to West Africa and talk to people there and watch what they say to you, of how grateful and how much gratitude and appreciation they have for America for allowing them to take the first colony or the first group of slaves that were released after emancipation and turn it into a colony, and then to have an American flag that they still wave to this day with one big star in the middle of it and say, we love you guys. We call ourselves, you know, Americans. And I'm like, what? Why didn't S2 tell us this? You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm worldly traveled, and I find that out the hard way. And then I come back and say, well, hey, there's a discrepancy in communication there between cultures. And I think we just keep going down this rabbit hole of, like, you don't need that, because your common enemy intimacy is a big deal that I try to teach and talk to a lot. Is what's wrong. I mean, look at the shooting communities, right? We still argue about how to grip a gun and stand. It's like, come on, guys. And then it's like, well, if you don't like what they do, John, you know, that other organization, then why don't you come stand next to me and we'll both talk crap about them? Like, that's common enemy intimacy. You have no idea. I have no idea what this thing is, right? But we have some intimate belief that we don't like it, so we're going to band together and fight against it. That's Antifa, BLM, white supremacy, KKK, Al-Qaeda, Taliban, you name it, all the organizations. That's Democrats, that's Republicans, that's everybody that falls into that intimacy of this enemy that they hate, but it brings them to a common place. Like, that's not authentic. That's not real, you know? So educate yourself to those things, because otherwise you're going to start hating people. And then what happens? That breeds destruction, right? Yeah. And so I think that, you know, again, somebody asked me what's wrong with the world. We just don't listen. We don't research enough. We take what other people tell us and just believe it and run with it. You know, the fake news, etc. So really, the education aspect is the biggest thing for me. And that's why I still find myself serving and training as much as I possibly can and sharing, because I know that's a big place that we need help in.
Military's gone extremely woke. I just saw something come out. I think it was just the terrible state of the upper brass in the military. How did you navigate that with, one, your son, and now you got potentially other kids that may be pressing into the military? I mean, what'd that look like? Did you want them to join? I know it's their life, and you don't want to... tell them what to do necessarily, but you care about them too. And
yeah, well, they certainly weren't groomed to go in the military. They were groomed to be good human beings, right? And of course, sometimes I have to realize that I have now about to be 9 generations of military service in the Haley family. My father was in Korea, grandfather was in First Wave Invasion Normandy. Was also the only service member to be in both theaters in all 3 major campaigns because he got on the wrong train. It's a whole other story. And had to serve with the Marines in the Pacific, and that's how he got over there. And both of his stories and flags are in the World War II Museum in Louisiana. So I grew up on these blood-soaked horror stories of war, and I said that's my destiny, same with my father. But then I found out many, many years later, only about 10 years ago, that we— you know, Dad, we didn't come from Germany, okay? We've been here since 1690 that I can track back. My 8th generation grandfather was a retired 52 years old William Haley on the farm in Virginia, and his son comes home who was a sergeant in the 11th Virginia Infantry and said, Dad, you got to get out of retirement, you got to fight. And so Dad fought as a private under his son James Haley in the revolution in 1775. And so,
wow. Civil War. What a story.
I found all this documentation like literally 10 years ago. I go, Dad, we're not from Germany. We're not even German. We're Irish English, and our family's been here since the 1600s, and I don't even know where we come from before that. So I've got, I mean, for me, that's a pretty proud thing to say, that I've got the deepest roots in this country, and they will not stop with me fighting. It's going to continue. So when the recruiter calls me and says, hey, Trav, my name's Gunny, Rodriguez over here at Scottsdale, I'm thinking that they want to come and have the kids go through the simulators or something. And I'm like, yeah, Rod, what's up, man? He's like, hey, I ran into your son today. I'm like, yeah, I've been asking him about what he wants to do in the world. And he's like, I don't know, Dad. And all of a sudden, he's like, well, he's signing up on a recon contract. I'm like, what? Wow. So I found out through the recruiter and went down there and said, hey, what's going on here, man? And so he's like, I'm doing this, Dad. I want to make a difference. I want to make the world a better place. And I'm like, that's okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is the right thing, but you know what to do. You're the 9th generation. It's like this weird, I'm in between these two worlds. And because I know about the issues in the military, man, it bothers me that he's going to have leaders that are in the spaces that they're in. And I think, you know, you have to step back and answer that question when people say, hey, are you sure you want your son joining the military right now? I'm like, well, what's the best way to fix a problematic system? It's put good people into it. And hopefully those good people don't get coerced and manipulated and treated like crap. And hopefully they can eventually grow up with good morals and principles and good parenting strategies and say, hey, I'm now in charge and we're going to change things. And sometimes it might take a while for us to do that, but if we don't keep filling it with good people and keep supporting from the outside like we do, it'll fall. And so I guess I've had to accept that with him and say, I will support you with whatever you need, son, and let's do this right. You know? So it's a bitter struggle, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm proud as hell of him. You know, I'm really proud.
Got it. Well, what's next for Haley Strategic? What's next for you, man?
We got a lot of stuff going on. The product development is always as usual. Again, and supporting the military with trying to continually give good weapons and equipment. You know, we're really working on that harder than we ever have with our Black Side divisions. We're doing rocket programs this year. We got a ton of Air Force stuff going on, and that's always exciting to be able to help those guys because, I mean, my son might be using this stuff, right? So I want to keep supporting as best I can. You know, that's always been there, you know, supporting law enforcement and people that protect and serve our communities and that are righteous, that have good intentions. You know, that's our mission. The people that aren't, we will try to weed them out as fast as possible. So that's the military and law enforcement world for us. We continue to support, we continue to serve them because they continue to serve us until they don't. And I don't have any doubts that that'll always be the case. They'll always be able to serve. But the responsible arm community, Americans, you know, I have got to remember what my grandfather said. And He said, freedom's not from guys like us storming beaches, man. It's not from planes and trains and ships going across oceans and lands. It's not from, you know, tanks crossing deserts and guys like me and you kicking doors and doing the job. It's not how freedom is created. Freedom is created by living free every single day. Like right now, the ability for us to sit here and just communicate back and forth with each other and the ability to take my kids to school and walk down the street free, which most countries in the world can't understand, that's how freedom is created. All the military does is protect that, right? Mm. All the law enforcement does is protect the community so we can still live free from criminals and other things like that. So our focus this year, John, is going to be massive on the American people. It has to be, because that's, I think, the biggest problem we have right now is, you know, the concern, the fear. And, you know, like I said earlier, man, we got to educate people. Otherwise, they're going to be in more fear. So our objective is, when people say, well, what's going to happen to our country? Is this going to be a biblical year? We are an election year. We've got all these multiple fronts about to kick off. And, you know, this cesspool of sex and child trafficking and money laundering, that's the thing of Ukraine's, that's been there for forever, to this whole Israeli BS conflict that's happening just so we can get to Iran, so we can get rid of the Shia, so we can make the Israelis and the Sunnis, which is the greatest population in the Middle East, so we can control the economy in the Middle East, because Russia and China just started talking about Middle Eastern reform 6 months ago, so we got to jump ship from Ukraine and go down to Israel. It's like, come on, man, I can see between the lines. So we want to educate people and say, don't be paranoid to that. That's always been going on. It's always been going on. You know that. It happened back in Grandpa's day. I'm sure it happened back in the Revolution. We just didn't know about it. But now we have social media and everything's aired out and everything's disinformation and misinformation. So we want to really do the best possible job we can this year of putting as many programs out there, speaking to as many people. Because the motto for Haley Strategic this year is community and purpose. So we want to have these community events, and we just did one here at our headquarters, and we did an open house for our partners at Scottsdale Tactical that just moved into the north end of our building. We said, let's do a little open house and have vendors come out. 7,000 people showed up, John. 7,000 wow. people showed up right here at our headquarters. Now, we had gun trucks and helicopters landing, and, you know, we typically do a big deal. But it wasn't a trade show. It wasn't a commercial, like, consumer show. It wasn't an industry show. All I said was, like, division is a big deal right now in this country. And community is the only thing that combats division. And so me and Sheriff Mark Lamb gave a speech up there and talked about that. And we were just dumbfounded and shocked at how many people, with a 2-week marketing plan, showed up just to say, we want to hang out and show how big this Arizona community is. So it's pretty cool to build that hope and confidence back into that. And which, you know, leads into educating people this year about the ones that are really concerned. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, hey, I'm at your service. I'm a part of the 3%. And I'm like, do you even understand what that concept is? So we have to educate people to that. And, you know, I think a lot of the concern is, well, we got a lot of people in this country, and are people actually going to stand up and fight if tyranny really rears its ugly head? And I know a lot of people are saying, well, you guys should already be fighting. You and John sitting there BSing right now instead of actually fighting for, like, okay, what are you going to fight for? Where's the enemy? Show me, you know, we kind of know who it is, but, like, yeah. Go ahead. No, I'm curious your thoughts on that.
I'm not shooting first. How about that? I'm going to engage in the war of ideas as long as I possibly can, until someone tries to kill me for saying it. And then I'm going to defend myself. Here's the thing of, like, it's one thing to jump on the comments, internet commando, and say, it's past talking time, let's go to war. I'm like, wait, you're asking me to just, like, go into the streets and start shooting Americans? What exactly are you
supposed to shoot?
Proposing of, like, well, the unarmed lefty that wants to yell me down of, like, no, I love those people. I want to rescue them from their own woke mind virus, you know. I want to rescue that person. I want to educate this person. I want to show them a better value. I would like to, You know, so
in a world that's made up of good ideas and bad ideas, that's a great idea. And I think a lot of guys out there that have been in combat aren't saying what those guys are saying. You know what I mean? Like, if you know, it's like the old saying, men who have seen violence, the last thing we want is violence in our life. That's the last thing I ever want to have to do again. Because anybody that thinks they know how to fight that war, even if they've got 29 years of combat experience, they're GB dudes, and they smoke people in the face every day, let's say, hypothetically, they don't know how to fight this fight. Because you know what you never had to do? You never had to say, hey, honey, kids, get back, stay down. Right. We don't know what that is. And so that's if anybody's got a plan that thinks that they can you know, task organize something like that and make it an easy fight, it's not. And so we're trying to prevent those things by any means necessary. And that's, again, a part of that education to go, hey, look, if something does weirdly happen, which, hey, last 3 to 5 years, it's kind of proven that there's some strange things that can absolutely happen. You know, like the next quarantine that goes down, potentially in September. You know, we hear all these little things from different doctors and people with the next pandemic coming. Well, what are you going to do? Are you going to quarantine your lives and shut your business down again? I'm not.
I didn't do it in the first place. I did not do any of it in the first place. Nope. Warrior Post said we shut down for a grand total of 1 day. One.
That's awesome.
We didn't get any shots. None of that stuff. Now, I had all the N95 masks, like at the beginning. Nope, nobody had anything. I'm like, I got hazmat suits and a self-sufficient farm. I was ready, but I saw BS on the wall immediately, and I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's what we did. We shut down for 1 day just to do a phase 1, 2, 3 and contingency plan in the event something gets greater. So that day was just mission planning for the entire staff here, because they're like, what do I do? What do I do for work? And I'm like, don't worry about it. Haley Strategic will float your salaries for at least in the next six months before we need to go into contingency 2 planning. So that's important for people to, you know, especially if you're a business owner, be ready for that, because it will happen again.
Right.
We've seen this horrible track record of you know, just garbage and disgust and misinformation, and I'm not going to let it happen again.
Right.
But it goes back to the numbers. You know, if I had a conversation with a student this weekend, he's like, I'm a part of the 3%. I'm like, okay, what does that mean? He didn't know.
Yeah.
And so, like, if you go back to that concept, you know, if you look at the population of the world back in 1775, or the population of America, it was like 2.6 million people, if you can fathom that, right? That'd be nice.
I thought it was even
property.
Less than that. Well,
yeah.
Okay.
It was about 2.1 million, if I remember right, whites that came over, and about 500,000 slaves, black slaves, and about 50,000 indigenous people, and a couple of other little groups here and there.
Yeah.
So 3% of that was only 150,000 people that actually literally fought, even though there was people that are supporting, and everybody's a survivalist back then. You know, you didn't have running water, you had your own wells, you had to dig or go forage for water, food every single day. And then if you had to fight, you stepped off your front porch with your musket. There wasn't get on a plane. There wasn't, like, you know, so again, I talk about that gap. Like today, the reason why people aren't fighting, like back in the day when Thomas Paine goes, hey, I got a little book I just wrote called Common Sense, and y'all might want to read this. Like, that was enough to trigger a lot of stuff.
Right.
Today, Jesus could come out of the sky, John, and I know you
and
know
he
this.
Will. He will.
And he will, but I think a majority of people would be like, oh, that's nice CGI, whatever. Like, that's how far removed we are from, you know, with technology and crap in this world and our kids being just brainwashed every single day. They wouldn't believe it if he even did come out. Now, of course, there's a whole different conversation with that. If he did come out, we got probably bigger problems to deal with. But with this numbers game, is there really 3% today of 340 million people? That's 10 plus million people, 10.4 million people. Are there really 10.4 million people that are going to fight, you know?
I don't know. But I think tyranny has come. I think our institutions of power have been hijacked. And I recognize bad stuff's always happened, but I don't want to have the intellectual or logical fallacy of inductive reasoning, because nothing, you know, has ended America before, then America can never end, whereas all nations end. And studying the rise, the zenith, and then the decline of any empire, there starts to be certain trends. And it does look like we are ending. And it looks like that fall is speeding up dramatically, which is part of what happens in those final days. And so I love my country, and I don't want that to happen. And I think there's still ground that can be regained in the culture war. I think we desperately, urgently need some political wins because, it's a rigged deck. And I don't know what other machinations they'll have from AI to, I don't know what new virus they're cooking up and when they choose on releasing that as a bioweapon on us again. So I don't know. So anyway.
We know something will happen, and that's where I don't want people to be, you know, scared of uncertainty, because I don't think, you know, uncertainty is kind of like truth and love. You know, it's one of the true natures of life, and because you can't stop it, it's going to happen whether you want it to or not, whether you like it or not. But so I don't think it's a problem that needs to be solved, because you'll drive yourself crazy trying to figure out how to be certain about what's going to happen tomorrow. What's the next virus? I should prepare for it. I have all this stuff. Like, no, just be prepared. And that's why we continue to do the training and speak to these things. I think, you know, there will be things that are coming. Every great nation eventually fails, like you said. But I think we can hold on a little longer. And I know there's at least 1 million or 2 million people out there that are a little angry, a little pissed off, and have a lot of potential to create some disruption. And I know a lot of people have said, well, guys like you or John or anybody else in our world are just going to serve your old masters. And I responded to a post the other night when somebody said that, you know, you're just puppets and you'll serve your old masters. And I was like, yeah, you're damn right I will. And they're like, see, you admit it. And I was like, yeah. What's the first three words in the Constitution?
We the people.
You're damn right I'm going to serve my old masters.
Yeah, and I am my brother's keeper.
That's right.
Absolutely. And my allegiance is to the Constitution, which makes us Americans. Very good. It's to the people. And so, yeah, I'm going to defend my brothers. But, man, hey, I really appreciate you and what you're doing. And Haley Strategic, you're awesome. You want to say any last words to our audience?
I always say, you know, when I close off, I say stay sharp, be safe, and die free. You know, and I think, you know, staying sharp, you know, to give a little bit of education to people again. You know, I always use the analogy, and, you know, you always hear steel sharpen steel, but give a knife, this is one of my fun ones. So I love kukris and stuff. So if I hand make this knife, which I did, what constitutes a working knife? A sharp edge. Well, how do you do that? You got to sharpen it. Okay, that's pretty easy for us to take a piece of steel and do that. But if I gave it emotions, if I gave it an affect, it would hurt, man, when you put that into the sharpening machine. So I think that's one of the big issues in our country specifically. I know the world, that we're afraid to sharpen ourselves anymore because it hurts so bad. Don't worry about the pain, right? Pain is mandatory. Suffering is optional. And so I think if we can remember that, we'll get up, and when we feel that pain or we don't want to go train that day, we don't want to do the right thing for our families, we don't want to start working on some type of ability to be more self-reliant. Like, if you have the ability to make a homestead, you should be doing that right now. Sorry.
Right.
If you don't, like me, I'm in the city, man. Yeah, I've got a couple acres inside the city, so I don't have a bug out plan. I've got a bug in plan. And then I have a bug out plan. So people need to think differently about that. So when I say stay sharp, like constantly sharpen that blade, and yes, it's going to hurt, but you're not suffering yet. And if you don't sharpen that blade, when the tyranny does strike, when evil does strike, you're going to suffer. Okay. You know, that second thing is be safe, man. You know, I think like Jordan Peterson says, yeah, do dangerous things carefully. It doesn't mean go out and just always be safe. It doesn't mean always have a warm and comfortable home. You know, every day I try to put myself through a little bit of pain just to remind myself I'm still alive, number one. And number two, to make sure that I'm able to be capable of any situation because I'm formidable. And then dying free, I don't think I got to explain that one, but you know what happens if you die free? Probably means you did something about it while you're alive to live free. And so that's what I share with the American people.
Well, That's a good word. We'll leave it there. Travis, thanks so much for joining us.
All right, guys, hope you enjoyed our friend Travis Haley. We're going to continue on with the show. For those of you who are tuning in on podcast or YouTube, thanks so much for tuning in. Hope you really enjoyed the show. If you like the rest of this show, Q and Ambush, I'm telling you, just liquid gold is coming through. Your questions, also Q and Ambush section, dad joke section. You don't want to miss the rest of the show. You can sign up at watchwpsn.com. That's watchwpsn.com. Then you can download our app, watch much better viewing experience. You get the rest of this show, all of our other shows, training classes. You don't want to miss it. And it's a great way to support the channel. So thanks so much for tuning in, guys. We'll see you next time.